Welcome to Blitzcast number 36. We've got a couple of scouting reports on tap. We're going to talk about Heisman finalists who we believe deserves to be there. We're going to talk about Bobby Petrino getting fired. We'll talk about the couple of big games next week, this weekend coming up in college football and the NFL. I'm Alex Kaptoff. I'm going to bring in Ed Hunt, my co-host and partner, right now. Ed, let's get to the scouting reports. You know, there's a player that I've gotten excited about, I would say, the past couple of months. I've really gotten excited about this player, where at this point I feel like he's the best wide receiver in this draft. Obviously, a lot of it depends on whether he enters the draft, but I'm pretty sure that he will. And that wide receiver is Kelvin Harmon from NC State. How do you feel about him? Give me your scouting report on this big wide receiver.
Well, you know, and I think you like about him is he's kind of an old school receiver. He kind of reminds you of kind of the, you know, 90s receiver, you know, go over the middle type. What I like about him is he's a possession receiver. He showed some potential with 50-50 balls. He's a great blocker. I mean, he really shows that he cares about blocking, and he's an aggressive blocker. It's kind of fun to watch. You know, I think his best trait is his route running. You know, he just wins those matchups. He cuts so well. I think he's a smart receiver too. I think he seems like the type of guy who watches a lot of tape, knows who he's playing against. I think what he is he's sneaky fast. He's not gonna burn you at the combine, and I don't think he'll do very well at the combine. And he may even drop at the combine. But I think he's the kind of guy who can kind of sneak by you just the way he plays the game and just the way he sort of knows where to be at the right time. You know, I guess a couple weaknesses. Not a guy you're gonna throw for yards after the catch. Not gonna be used on screens. He's a bit of a body catcher. I would say the last one is that he's not like a burner. Like, he's not gonna burn you deep. He's gonna kind of sneak by you deep. So I wouldn't really consider him a deep threat.
Well, he has been one in college, but it's not like he's running away from people. And a lot of the times when he's making those downfield catches, the defender is right there. So he's making a lot of tough catches downfield. And I agree with you. I mean, speed is going to be a major question mark. And a lot of people are going to be watching him, because I know that he's being talked about as a first round pick right now, especially with this wide receiver class. To be honest with you, it's not that great. I mean, we've talked about some guys in previous months. I mean, we talked about A.J. Brown, Marquise Brown, but Kelvin Harmon is just an interesting prospect because he's so big. I mean, he's got great size. He displays consistent hands. He's a strong player. He's got a muscular build. I mean, he is a guy that's legitimately going to be 6'2", 6'2½, 215, 220. And he's already built like what teams are looking for in a pro receiver. I agree with you on the blocking part. He really does care. He sustains those blocks up to the whistle. He's a good route runner. He excels on double moves and back shoulder throws. And he has that short area quickness. He's able to create separation, especially on those short throws. He demonstrates terrific body control, long arms. He's a clutch wide receiver. I think he's an athletic guy. He's got great leaping ability. I expect him to test well in the vertical jump, in the broad jump. I think he's going to do well there. The speed is going to be the major question mark, because I think he's a 4.55 guy at best. And, you know, it's not blazing speed. speed. It's not 4-4 speed. But I would compare him to a DeAndre Hopkins, because when he was coming out of Clemson, I just see a lot of similarities between the two. They're pretty similar in terms of size. They were both good route runners. They make a lot of catches in traffic. And that's where I make that comparison out there. Again, he is a body catcher. I think he definitely needs to use his hands more when he's being pressed at the line of scrimmage. He uses his quickness. I think he has to become more of a weapon in the red zone. Hasn't put up those huge, totals for touchdowns. And at times you see him, he's not challenged a lot, but he struggles against the press, especially against Clemson. The Clemson game, when they challenged him, he had trouble getting off the press at times. So, we can nitpick a little bit, but when you're looking at the bigger picture, speed is the only weakness, is the only issue. And those guys that run a 4.55 don't usually go in the top 10. But because he's so good in terms of his hands, in terms of his route running, I actually feel good. I'm putting him out there as my number one wide receiver right now in this draft.
I just don't think he has the raw traits that scouts are going to love. I think he's going to have a good NFL career, but I don't see him being an early first-round pick. I think at best he's kind of a late first-rounder. I think he'll have a good career. I think he'll be a valuable. But I just think that NFL teams, they kind of like it to be a little bit sexier. They want somebody who's, has the height he has, but has the long speed. Can be a deep threat. Can be just a little bit more of a Julio Jones.
Not everybody is a Julio Jones. But I remind you, Corey Davis went 5th overall to the Tennessee Titans, and he never ran the 40. I mean, he was faster than Kelvin Harmon, but it's not like he had low 4.4. I mean, he was in the high 4.4s out there. So another question mark for him, and I question this with Harmon. I want to see that, and I'm going to see that at the combine. I want to see his hand size, because I don't think he's got large hands. He's got good catching radius. He's got long arms, but I have question marks about those hands. I mean, we want them to be about, 9.5, I mean, closer to 10 if we're going to call an elite wide receiver. I just think they're a bit small, and I think that's the reason he doesn't trust them as much as he should, because he's got consistent hands, and that's the reason why he body catches. I have question marks about his hand size.
Yeah, he doesn't strike you as 6'3 on tape. I mean, I've seen him listed at 6'3, but he kind of looks on tape like he's more like a 6-footer or a 5'11.
No, he's 6'2. No, he's 6'2. He's listed as 6'3. Usually those guys tip to at about 6'2. I would say he's a 6'2, 215, 218. I mean, that's legitimate. He looks big, and I would have to disagree. On tape, I mean, he looks like a wide receiver that would plug in tomorrow because of his size and his route running ability and his ability to make plays in those situations, in traffic and out there. And because he's able to run those hitch and goes, he runs slants, I mean, curls, hooks, deep outs. I mean, he runs the full route tree, and he's really advanced at that. For a guy that's 20 years old, for a guy that's been featured in this offense, NC State's offense, only 2 years. I mean, I don't count that freshman year when he was just coming into his own. But I really like the guy. Like I said, I had a man crush on James Washington last year. I've got a crush on Kelvin Harmon. There's some things I want to see from him a little bit more. Again, hand size, speed. But I think he is an athletic guy. And he's definitely not A.J. Green. He's not Julio Jones. I mean, he's not a guy that's 6'2", 6'3", that runs in the 4.4s. But I think because of his ability to – he's a technician, and that really helps him. A lot of people question DeAndre Hopkins as well because they felt like he didn't have the speed. I want to remind our listeners, Hopkins ran a 4.57 at the combine. He came back at his pro day and ran in the 4.4s. both times. But, you know, you take that with a grain of salt because usually guys are faster at their pro days. That's always been the case. And so he was still, I mean, if you take the average of those times, he ran a 4.57 at the combine and ran a low 4.4 at the pro day. I mean, he's somewhere in the low 4.5s. So, and we've seen that Hopkins has been, you know, the number one target for the Texans for all those years. And he's been one of the better wide receivers for the past couple of years. So I just want to make that comparison early right now. We still don't know if he's entering the draft, and I'm talking about Kelvin Harmon. But I think he will because Ryan Finley is going to graduate, and it just doesn't make much sense for him to go back for his senior year. Especially I've heard that he's been participating with all the seniors. They had senior night, and he was included with the top seniors in there. So I think that gives you an indication that Kelvin Harmon is a goner. And especially, like I said, with this wide receiver class, everybody's got weaknesses. I mean, A.J. Brown is a big slot wide receiver. Marquise Brown is just too light. I mean, 165 pounds, even though he's got great speed. So all the wide receivers that have been mentioned as first-round picks, I mean, they have some question marks surrounding them. All right, let's talk about Draymond Jones. Let's get to the big ugly on the defensive line from Ohio State. What do you like about him?
Well, you know, I think he's the type of guy who runs to the football. I think he's more the athletic type. I think he could make for a decent pass rusher. I think he has good pass rush moves for a defensive tackle. I think he can get off blocks and tackle. I don't think it's, you know, an elite trait for him. I think he has quick feet. He has a great motor. You know, he did draw double teams on a good, you know, more on running plays he drew double teams, but on a good Ohio State team, that's kind of impressive.
Yeah, he was doubled quite a bit in 2017, and in 2018 he's taken a step forward a little bit. I mean, Nick Bosa hasn't played in a while, and Draymond Jones has actually been a better player statistically during his junior year than when he was as a sophomore. But I still think when you look at his skill set, it just doesn't match his production. I mean, you expect a guy, he's athletic, he's got a quick first step, he can, you know, he's able to get to the quarterback, but he overruns a lot of plays, he gets too high, he needs to play with better leverage. He loses his balance quite a bit. I mean, he's on the ground way too much. I mean, you don't want to see that, whether you're a defensive lineman or an offensive lineman. And he winds up on the ground too much. And I just feel like, you know, there's a lot of things. I wouldn't consider him a quick twitch guy because I think his COD, his change of direction skills, they're average at best. I think he's going to test well, but in pads, he doesn't change directions that quickly. He needs to stay square to the line of scrimmage. He's a player I struggle with. To be honest with you, even though I've seen some progress from him this year, he has been a better player. But I struggle putting this player in the top 10. You know, I see a top 10, top 15 pick. Right now I see a guy that's worthy of a late first-round pick. And if you look at my mock draft, I actually have him going a lot higher because I feel like there's going to be a run on defensive tackles, on defensive linemen. I think people are going to look at his skills, his physical skills. He's going to test really well. But his tape, it just doesn't match that skill set. And that's what I struggle with.
You know, when I walked away from the tape, I thought, you know, this guy's got a lot of hype, but I was thinking more of a second or third round pick. You know, one thing that I noticed a lot on tape is him getting overpowered. I think he needs a stronger core. I think he looks a little undersized on tape. I think he needs to sort of, what they say is like kind of get a little bit bigger in the lower body. I think he
He struggles at the point of attack. That's what it is.
Yeah.
And he struggles whether it's against the run. If he doesn't win with his first step, I mean, he battles. He has active hands, but he's able to disengage. But he needs to become a better technician, and he needs to get stronger, that functional strength. And, you know, obviously he is, what, like 6'3", 290? But I think he's closer to, like, 6'1.5" or 6'2". He looks undersized for a defensive tackle. He came to Ohio State as a defensive end, moved to defensive tackle the last couple of years. I see a guy that's still trying to find his way.
Yeah, I like him much more as like a 3-4 defensive end than I do in a 4-3.
Oh, you do? I like him more as a 3 technique because he still has that quickness. He still has that quick first step, and he can get to the quarterback. He can shoot those gaps and collapse the pocket. I'm not sure that he can take on double teams. I feel like a guy who is 6'1.5", 6'2", is not going to be able to match up as a 3 as a 5 technique and a 3-4 defense. I have question marks about him taking on double teams because those double teams, they wash him out of most plays, and you have to be able to hold your ground, and he struggles at the point of attack. That's why I don't see a 5 technique. No way in hell is he a 5 technique in the NFL where offensive tackles are a lot bigger and stronger than what he's matching up against in college.
I don't really see a guy who's a plugger in the middle either. That's the problem.
He's not. He relies on his quickness, shooting gaps, and trying to get to the quarterback. I mean, he's a disruptive defensive tackle, but he's not that disruptive. I mean, when you scout him, because, like I said, I've seen some promising things from him. I watched, I think, 2 games this year, and I thought that he was a better player. More focused. I felt like he has become a better technician. But in 2017, he struggled in a couple of games. He just, on a defensive line that talented, you know, they had a couple of guys that were drafted. And then you got, you know, Sam Hubbard, you got Nick Bosa. I mean, you're going to get a lot of opportunities. And he was shooting the gaps, but he was overrunning the quarterback. He wasn't able to locate the ball. And that's what I struggle with. I mean, Draymond Jones, to me, is one of the more overhyped, I would say, defensive linemen in this year's draft.
Well, I think we both agree on that.
All right, let's talk about Heisman talk. We decided to go with 6 players that we feel deserve to be in that deserve to be in New York. So let's start with the list. Let's start with number 1, which I'm sure it's not a big surprise who it is.
Yeah, I'm gonna say right away and say it's Tua Tagovailoa. You know, he should be the winner. You know, the offense has just been dominant. You know, they've dominated the SEC. They've dominated the best conference. They're the best team. They probably are the best Alabama team ever. And there's not a lot of question that they'll run the table this year.
All right, who's number 2? Let's go through the list, and then we'll just, you know, critique it. I'll give my 2 cents.
I got number 2, Kyler Murray. I think he's had a good year. He's a little short, but he's you know, he's got a live arm. I think that's what I like about him. Throws the ball around the field. You know, Oklahoma's been a high scoring offense, and I think that's one of the reasons why they're a single digit seeded team.
Don't you think Kyler Murray is more valuable to his team than Tua? Like, I always ask myself this question. Like, Baker Mayfield won the Heisman Trophy last year. You plugged in Kyler Murray, and people thought that Oklahoma is going to take a step back. But in all honesty, I mean, they haven't lost anything. I mean, they're still in this race. They could still get to the college football playoff, and he's been really good every week. And I just feel like if you take Tua off the offense, I think Alabama is still going to win. If you take Kyler Murray away, I don't think Oklahoma, and I think they would lose a couple of more games. That's why I feel like Kyler Murray deserves to be number 1, because I believe he's more valuable to his team. We're not talking about what an NFL prospect he is, but in terms of what the Heisman Trophy stands for as the most valuable player, I would say he has definitely been more valuable than Tua.
But I think the thing about that is that you put Tua on Oklahoma, and Oklahoma is just as good, if not better. I mean, wouldn't you agree?
But if you put Kyler Murray, you could make the same case. I mean, if you put Kyler Murray for Oklahoma team, I think he wouldn't play, you know, the second half of games. You know, I think you can make a case for both players, but I would actually have Kyler Murray number one because I think he's more valuable. I think both guys deserve it. One guy is going to walk away with it. But to me, I've been more impressed with Kyler Murray the past couple of weeks. All right. Is Will Grier number three?
Yeah, just, you know, arm talent, big numbers. I think West Virginia's 10 now. You know, he's a big reason why.
All right, continue with your list. Who else is in there?
Gardner Minshew. I think he's led a surprise Washington State team this year. He's been a leader, and he was supposed to transfer to be the backup at Alabama. I think he actually has some coaching aspirations, and he thought, you know, playing in Alabama would boost his resume. You know, but for him to win the Heisman, he'd have to at least win the Pac-12, and that's not even sure yet right now. I think they're probably the favorite to win the Pac-12, but I don't know if it's even sure they're going to win the Pac-12. So yeah, I mean, and a Pac-12 is not as prestigious conference as, you know, the ones that Tua's playing in. And Shea Patterson, for that matter.
Well, last time a Washington State quarterback was in New York for the Heisman Trophy, that was Ryan Leaf. That was back in 1997. That was a long, long time ago. So I'm hoping Mr. Mustache Man is going to be there because he's certainly a character. East Carolina transferred to Washington State as a graduate transfer, and he's been lighting it up. I get it. I mean, Washington State is a QB-friendly system. We saw it last year with Luke Falk and the past couple of years, but I like what he's doing there. Definitely deserves to be in there based on the numbers. All right, two more guys.
So, I mean, one you have to mention is Shea Patterson. Just with how well Michigan's done this year, you got to kind of include their quarterback. I think he'll be drafted. I don't know if I see him having really much of an NFL career, but I see him being drafted.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's forget about drafted, not drafted. I mean, we're talking about the Heisman Trophy here. I think Patterson is going to be he's going to be in training camp somewhere, but I don't think he's going to make the 53-man roster, even as a rookie. That's basically the fate. But definitely, Michigan has had a great year, and he deserves it. I actually have Dwayne Haskins. I mean, I agree with you with all the top four guys, but I would actually still have Dwayne Haskins in there based on what he's doing. I mean, when you look at his numbers, obviously Ohio State hasn't been great, especially the past couple of weeks, but he has played well. And I think that his statistical numbers say that he's one of the guys that deserves to be in there. Are you going to include him, or are you going to go with the running back as your last guy, last candidate?
I'm going to go all quarterbacks, but okay. I mean, I think he's got a lot of like traits that teams will like, but I see a lot of Cardale Jones in him.
And okay.
I know he's definitely a rich man's Cardale Jones, but I mean, there's some worry for me in there. I mean, do you think that's a bias on my part?
I actually think that he should return for his junior season. I don't think he should come out as a redshirt sophomore. He's had a great year, but he needs another year as the starter at Ohio State. I just think he needs more seasoning. And right now, if we're talking about next year's draft, I don't see him as a top 10, top 15 pick. I wouldn't have a problem spending a day two pick on him, but I think he has room to grow, and that's why I think he can be one of the top quarterbacks in the 2020 draft if he improves on some things. But right now, I wouldn't I mean, it's a temptation, but I wouldn't flirt with the NFL. Who's your sixth quarterback in there?
Yeah, so it's all six quarterbacks. Dwayne Haskins.
Dwayne Haskins is the guy. Okay, I'll include Jonathan Taylor in there. I think when you're going and rushing for over 1,500 yards, you've got 12 touchdowns. You know, you've got one game without going over 100 rushing yards. I mean, he's been dominating the Big Ten in there. He's going against Michigan. He's going against Iowa. He's going against Ohio State. And Taylor is still putting up huge numbers. I get it. Wisconsin has got a great offensive line. But they've got a horrible quarterback. And everybody knows that they want to run the football. And Taylor is still getting, you know, 150 yards almost every week. And that's quite impressive. So the sophomore running back who's not eligible for next year's draft is putting up numbers that you put him in New York. I mean, it's impressive category. Plus, I wanted to mix it up. I didn't want to include six quarterbacks in there. I wanted to put in, you know, a defensive player or a running back or a wide receiver. I felt good about the Taylor pick. I think he's been one of the top players in college football the past couple of years, and he deserves to be in there.
I just think with the Heisman voting, there's some consideration as to how good your team did.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Agreed. Agreed. But if you go over 2,000 rushing yards, hey, you're still one of the better players in the nation, you certainly have to be included in there. Even though, like I said, he doesn't have a realistic chance of winning, but he definitely deserves to be one of the top players in there. Because going over 2,000 yards is quite impressive. And it's a feat in itself. But I agree with you. Everybody expected Wisconsin to battle for the Big Ten title, to possibly be in the discussion in the college football playoff. And they're certainly out of it right now. But it's not his fault that they've got, you know, a horrible quarterback in there. All right, Bobby Petrino. You know, Louisville decided it was time to pull the plug, and I guess it's fair. I mean, when you're losing to Clemson, what, 77-14, when you're getting blown out by 50 points, you know, a couple of consecutive weeks, I mean, something isn't working, and they decided to pull the trigger on most of the staff. They didn't just let Petrino go, but they let most of the coaching staff go. So Bobby Petrino dismissed from Louisville, 2-8 season. Obviously, I'm not going to talk about good move, bad move. He had some success early. He came back. He had Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson moved on, and everything kind of fell apart.
I think you said it right there with the Lamar Jackson leaving. That's what really hurt Louisville.
It did. And everybody knew that he was going to leave, and we felt like Bobby Petrino was going to prepare the next quarterback to be his replacement, but it certainly didn't happen. He didn't find his next Lamar Jackson in waiting. So let's talk about the potential candidates. Who are a couple of guys that you feel would be good fits here for the Cardinal?
Well, the first name that everyone's talking about is Jeff Brohm, who's the Purdue coach. You know, he reportedly has a house in Louisville.
He coached at Louisville, so.
Yeah, he was an assistant. He started there as a player. It sounds like what I think is attractive about him is he's a guy who would stay there if he got picked. You know, for instance, maybe like a Ryan Day, who I was going to talk about, or a Luke Fickle. You know, Ryan Day is the type of guy who, you know, eventually he wants to be the head guy of a major program, whereas maybe Jeff Brohm might be content, you know, taking over his alma mater and, you know, leading the charge with them, whereas a guy like Ryan Day, who's, you know, has been kind of just moving up the coaching ranks, and, you know, the next logical step is for him to take a head coaching job, and then right after that, you know, let's say he gets the Louisville job, right, then he's going to probably want a major college football job, you know, like an Ohio State type of job.
But you don't think Louisville is a great job? I mean, I think it is. Look, maybe it's not up there with, you know, Ohio State or Michigan or something like that, but I think Louisville is a really, really good job. I mean, it has turned into a good job. Charlie Strong was the head coach there, then Bobby Petrino. They get talented players. They're able to compete. They obviously have to rebuild that defense a little bit because I think Petrino has forgotten about that side of the field. But I think it is an attractive job.
I guess, but I prefer like a – I mean, if you're a coach, you want to coach in the SEC, you want to have that kind of recruiting pipeline, or you want to have, you know, a major program name like USC or Ohio State. That's kind of where I stand on it.
All right, so you've got Dane, you've got Luke Fickell. I think Luke Fickell is an interesting name. Look, obviously he was at Ohio State before. He's turned that program around. They're 11-1 this year at Cincinnati. It's been steady progress, and I like Luke Fickell. I actually believe that Louisville should hire a defensive coach. That's why I'm all in on Fickell here, because look. They've given up 50 points in three straight games. They haven't been good on defense, even with Lamar Jackson, the past 2 or 3 years. So I think Luke Fickell can bring that tenacity and that toughness to that team, and they could turn into a really good defensive unit. I think that's what they need. They don't need an offensive coach, in my opinion. And other guys, Charlie Strong. Look, Charlie Strong failed miserably at Texas, but remember what he did at Louisville before. He was able to recruit the Florida region. He was with Teddy Bridgewater. Louisville had success, and obviously Charlie Strong moved on, but Bobby Petrino went back. He coached at Louisville before. Why not Charlie Strong? He's a defensive coordinator before, a defensive coach. I liked what he did at Louisville, and so Louisville might turn back to one of their former coaches again.
Yeah, I guess though, when you're picking a coach, you want a coach on the rise as opposed to a coach who kind of had a big job and, you know, was kind of taking a lesser job.
But he's had so much success at South Florida. I mean, he's turned that worthless program around, and I'm impressed. I mean, when a coach can rebound like that, I think he can do and bring Louisville again back to respectability. But I do agree that Jeff Brohm is going to be on top of their list. Things that he did at Western Kentucky, he built that program. Purdue gave him a job. He obviously has an extension until like 2024, but look, we've seen buyouts before, and I'm sure Louisville would be Jeff Brohm's job. Dream job. So that's something to look forward to. But if it's not Brohm, then I would look at Charlie Strong or Luke Fickell. That would be my top candidates. Let's talk about the top games this week. I'm looking at it. Syracuse against Notre Dame at Yankee Stadium. Syracuse has certainly surprised everyone, I think, and Ian Book is coming back. He's going to be the starting quarterback this week. Can Syracuse threaten Notre Dame? What do you think?
I just think Notre Dame's going to have so much motivation because this is kind of the final hump for them to, you know, run the table.
I'm going to say it. I think Syracuse pulls the upset here. I've just been impressed by what they've been able to do. And it's not only Eric Dungy, the quarterback. I think Syracuse has been a good team this year. It's been a good, solid effort. And I think it's a team that has gotten better. And I think they're going to pull the upset. So that's going to be my upset. I think Notre Dame gets, even though Notre Dame is somebody that I've picked to go to the college football playoff, but I want this whole thing to kind of turn upside down a little bit. I want some other teams to get back into it. And I think Notre Dame is going to be out of it come the early next week when the new college football playoff is released. Duke against Clemson. You and I are going to do a scouting report on Daniel Jones, the talented quarterback from Duke. He's going to go against Clemson. Is he in for another tough day?
Clemson has played well in close games. They've they've dominated on the defensive side of the ball. You go with Clemson until they play Alabama, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's hard not to go against Clemson. I think they had a tougher game than I guess they anticipated last week against Boston College. It wasn't that close, but the fact that they were they were able only to score, what, they scored 27 points during that game. I mean, that's, you take their hat off already to the BC hopeful. But you still go with Clemson. I mean, I don't think Duke has enough weapons to get it done. Cincinnati against UCF, a game I wanted to talk about because we usually talk about the SEC, the Pac-12, the Big Ten, and those two teams kind of get left out a little bit. UCF is a team that went undefeated last year. They're 11-0 this year, and we talked about Luke Fickell, what he's been able to do at Cincinnati, 11-1. Huge matchup in this conference.
Yeah, I mean, this will I mean, a part of me wants to see Cincinnati win this game just so we can kind of put to rest the at UCF in the playoff talk. But and I know I'm not going to make many friends with that, but
you know they're still not going to be in there.
Even if they win this game.
It doesn't matter. I mean, even if they beat Cincinnati, well, say by 30 or 40 points, I don't think it's going to happen. But even if they won big, they're still not going to make their way in there. It's impossible.
UCF is a really good team, and they're good at playing the teams that they play.
Yeah, they are. And it's, like I said, I think it's going to be a closer game than we think, but I think UCF is going to come out on top. All right, let's move on to the NFL. Impressions from this week. You know, it started off rough for the New Orleans Saints. They signed Dez Bryant. He shows up to practice, and then the second day of practice, he tears his ACL. And now the Saints have signed Brandon Marshall, another veteran wide receiver. Your impressions from just Sunday's games, just overall, what impressed you, what didn't?
Well, I thought the Cowboys in the Sunday night game, you know, this could have very much been Jason Garrett's last game. I fully think that this, you know, he was playing for his job, and I think if he lost that game, he would have lost his job. So I have to credit the Cowboys with pulling off their win. I'm gonna toot the Steelers' horn a little bit. You know, on Thursday Night Football, they came out. They were much better prepared than Carolina. If that was a Sunday game, it would have been a closer game for sure. But I still credit the Steelers getting ready on a short week and beating the Panthers the way they did. You know, I sort of remember saying at the beginning of the season is, I don't know if this is the year that the Steelers are very good. I just thought that you know, cornerback play was really bad. I didn't think Keith Butler was coaching very well. You know, I thought he was overmatched. He got really exposed against Kansas City, and I thought that was going to open up the floodgates for the rest of their schedule, just how to beat the Steelers.
The defense played well. They were able to get pressure on Cam Newton, and they were smart about it. They were able to contain him in the pocket, and that was what was most impressive. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger obviously had a great day, 5 touchdowns. They scored 52 points on a very good Carolina Panthers defense. But what impressed me the most is the defensive performance, because you and I talk about the Steelers, and we both expressed concerns, especially you, that the defense was in bad shape. And against Carolina, they were, you know, they played their best game.
I mean, a name you haven't heard much of lately is, you know, a lot of the talk was around, well, can they play without Ryan Shazier? And I know it's not very PC to say this, but I mean, it seems like they've kind of shown that they can play without Ryan Shazier at this point.
I think they've moved on, and I think they're finding their identity. And right now, the Steelers are the hot team in the NFL, not only the AFC, but in the NFL. And you know what? I'm going to say this on the air. I'm glad that Le'Veon Bell isn't coming back to this team, because I think he's gonna break the spirit. This team has bonded together. They've gone through their early struggles this season. You know, Connor, Roethlisberger. This team has rallied. And I think if Le'Veon Bell would have come back, I think it would have broken their spirit a little bit, especially with, you know, some teammates not having kind words to say towards Bell. So I'm glad he's staying away from the team. Sure, I'm sure he would have helped on the field, but I think he would have would have broken that bond that the Steelers seem to have off the field right now. And they're riding really high right now. And maybe they're peaking a little bit too soon, but they're the hot team right now in the NFL. I don't think it's going to change. I mean, they're going to be one of the, you know, the first or the second seed in the AFC, and they might actually, you know, it might be the Chiefs, the Steelers, and then the Patriots. And I'm actually, you know, my Super Bowl pick with the Steelers, it's looking pretty good right now. I've been riding a roller coaster out there. I mean, I picked the Steelers, and I'm like, geez, I gotta abandon that right now. I can't believe I picked them for the Super Bowl. Right now, they're showing what I anticipated them to demonstrate in the beginning of the season.
Well, they'll probably do another one of their, you know, get out coached in the playoffs type of swan songs again. That's just what we've come to expect from the Steelers these years. But you know, they have been a really great regular season team, and you know, they've been, you know, Tomlin, I do credit Tomlin. You know, he hasn't had less than an 8-8 season, so I give him that.
All right. I mean, you like stability. I get it. Let's talk about another AFC North team. Let's talk about the Browns. Look, they fired their coaches, and Baker Mayfield came out and just, he was firing on all cylinders. I mean, he was perfect in the first half, and that was really good to see. I mean, he was getting the ball out quicker. You know, there was, you know, they were putting him in shotgun. He was making quick decisions. It's what made him great in Oklahoma in that offense, and I think the Cleveland Browns are trying to do the same here at the NFL level. He was accurate, and this was against the Falcons. I mean, he knew where to go with the ball, and he carried the Browns to victory, along with Nick Chubb. I'm not going to say that the Baker did it all by himself, but, you know, a first overall pick and an early second-round pick carried that offense and got the job done against a talented Falcons team.
Yeah, you have to give him credit because, I mean, you know, when you fire the coach, you kind of, it's kind of like saying, all right, the season's over. But, I mean, is it possible that Greg Williams wins the job in Cleveland?
I mentioned that before. I said that I think if Greg Williams gets them to 500, maybe 7-9, I think he has a chance to keep that job. Why not? I mean, if the guy rallies the troop, if the defense played the way it played against Atlanta, and Baker Mayfield looks good with the new offensive coordinator, why not? I mean, it's a possibility. I mean, why would you pull the plug on something that's working? I mean, the one thing that I think the Browns ownership is looking for is stability at the head coaching position. If Greg Williams proves his worth, I mean, why look in another direction? Right? It's a possibility, Ed.
Well, I think if I was a Browns player, I wouldn't want him to become the coach. Just, you know, his personality is just very fiery. I don't know. I think he'd be a hard coach to play for.
It's working with that defense, though. I mean, the defense is getting the job done.
I mean, if he's lighting a fire under them, yeah, keep him around. But
I mean, like I said, I've been impressed with the defense. I think they've done well considering that they don't have all the parts. I mean, they don't have the linebackers that they want. They need another three technique in the middle to pair with Agunjobi and Myles Garrett. They got Ward at the one cornerback spot, but they still need help in the secondary, especially at the other cornerback spot. So there are a lot of pieces that the Cleveland Browns still don't have, but that defense has played well.
Well, one last thing I want to say about the Browns. It looks like their draft is looking pretty good compared to you know, what we were talking about after the draft. I mean, Baker Mayfield, better than I thought. Nick Chubb, better than I thought. Denzel Ward, better than I thought. So I have to hand it to
John Dorsey did an incredible job.
I think he had a good draft. I mean, so far he's had a good draft.
Well, I mean, I like to evaluate the draft 3 years from now, but if you're judging based on this year, yeah, absolutely. All three of those guys have been incredible, and he gets an A+ if those guys continue to play at this high level and, you know, improve and get better. If we're going to look at this draft 3 years from now and Ward is a Pro Bowler and Mayfield is a Pro Bowler, you know, they found Harrison, who's playing left tackle, Desmond Harrison in the seventh round. Yeah, it's an incredible draft right now. If Nick Chubb stays healthy, yeah, the John Dorsey should get an A-plus for this draft if these guys continue to play like this. All right, we talked about the good. Let's talk about a little bit of the bad. Todd Bowles, a dirt cutter, who gets fired? I think one of these guys has to be gone before the season ends.
I think Todd Bowles has to go because I think they need to get the right coach for Sam Darnold.
Yeah, I just like both of these guys were really disappointed in me on Sunday, and here's the reason why. The Jets gave up 41 points to the Buffalo Bills. Buffalo Bills are the worst offense in the NFL. They have Matt Barkley starting. He was a third-string quarterback a couple of weeks ago when they signed him. Nobody wanted this guy, and Matt Barkley looked like Joe Montana during that game, and that was embarrassing. I mean, Todd Bowles is a defensive coach, and forget about the offense. Sam Darnold didn't play, but forget about that. I mean, you can't give up 41 points to the Buffalo Bills. That means you've lost the team. And Dirk Cutter, he was doing the play calling duties. He was the offensive coordinator during their game. He scored 3 points, even though Ryan Fitzpatrick and the offense looked good. They had like over 500 yards overall. But 3 points? I mean, all those turnovers, all those penalties. I don't think Dirk Cutter knows what he's going to do this week. I think he's going to go back to Jameis Winston. And that just, it tells me that the head coach just doesn't know what he's doing.
Back to Jameis Winston.
I think time is up. Time is up. I mean, Dirk Cutter is desperate right now. I think he will. All right, we've got a couple of big games this week, and we're going to end on a high note here. We've got the Vikings against the Bears for the NFC North lead, and we've got the Rams against the Chiefs in Mexico City. I think we'll find out, the two high-scoring offenses, Rams against the Chiefs, and then the Vikings and the Bears. I mean, it's a classic NFC North slugfest.
Yeah. I have to take the Bears over the Vikings at this point. I had the Vikings as my NFC team in the finals, but they really just haven't played as well as I thought they would. I don't think their defense has been as good. I don't think Kirk Cousins has been as much of an upgrade over Case Keenum as I thought he would be. I think on paper, he's much better, but I just have to accept it. Case Keenum had a one-year wonder.
Yeah, he was. But we have to be Kirk Cousins has been an upgrade over Case Keenum. I mean, he's been really good at times. And the Vikings had 2 weeks to prepare for the Bears. And Mitch Trubisky had his best game on Sunday. I mean, he looked freaking incredible during that game. Now people are comparing Mitchell Trubisky to Jared Goff and what he did last year with Matt Nagy. But I'm going to give the edge to the Vikings just because I think Zimmer had 2 weeks to prepare, and I think he's going to have his defense playing really, really well. Cooper Kupp went down, tore his ACL. Huge loss for the Los Angeles Rams. Are they going to be able to top the Chiefs in Mexico?
Yeah, they still have Brandon Cooks and Robert Woods, so I'm not too worried about their receiving core.
Yeah, I think the Rams have to come out and just be sharper than they were against the Saints from the first minutes, because the Chiefs want to jump on them. And it's a game I'm looking forward to. It's a game I had circled like a month ago, Ed. I mean, I wanted to see these two high-powered offenses, and I wanted to see which defense is actually going to come to play, because the Rams have had issues stopping the run. And the Chiefs have been really good after getting after the quarterback, especially Dee Ford, but they've struggled to keep opponents out of their end zone. So it's going to be interesting to see which defense is going to come out on top here, because we both know that both offenses are going to be great.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a shootout. This will tell us something about Patrick Mahomes. Is he going to be able to sort of at the end of the year? We know he's going to be there at the end, but the question is can he win these tough games?
I'm going to go with Wade Phillips on this, because when Wade Phillips has time to prepare, he usually does really, really well against your young quarterbacks. Patrick Mahomes is different than some of the other young quarterbacks that we've seen. But I'm going to give the edge to Wade Phillips because I think he's going to design a good game plan, and I'm taking the Rams on this one. All right, this was Blitzcast number 36. I'm your host, Alex Kavtoff. For my co-host and partner, Ed Hunt, we'll be back next week. Thanks for listening. Take care.